You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi everyone, this is Shovik and welcome to the Mint TechCetera podcast. I cover technology for Mint, where we try to make boring tech sound cool for you and hope that we don't end up making cool tech sound boring. Tune in as we decode the latest from the world of technology in India and around the world every week. Today's episode will be presented to you by RJ Ayush, who's a radio jockey with Fever FM and hosts his own tech show called Tech Panti. Over to you, Ayush.
Thank you so much for the introduction, Shovik. This is a special episode brought to you by NASCOM. Innovative technologies and strategies are transforming customer experiences across various industries. Whether it's healthcare, banking, or telecom, artificial intelligence is a key player in boosting business growth and ensuring customer happiness. By harnessing the power of AI, organizations are revolutionizing the entire customer journey. And we've seen some truly remarkable examples of this through captivating case studies and valuable industry insights. Curious about how AI can create delightful customer experiences? In this episode, we are joined by Sundara Sukavanam, the Chief Digital Officer at First Source Solutions. With over 28 years of experience in IT and operations, Sundara is a visionary leader in business and technology. Sundara's expertise lies in intelligent automation, analytics, and the seamless integration of cutting-edge technologies into scalable business offerings. Join us as we explore his insightful tips on utilizing AI to cultivate customer delight. Welcome to our podcast, Mint TechCetera. Hi, Sundara. How are you?
Hey, Ayush. I'm doing really well. Excited to be here. This is sort of the core topic of conversation, you know, not just around the water coolers and boardrooms, but everywhere. So, you know, amazing to be here. Thank you.
First of all, if you'd let our listeners know that you've joined from New Jersey, how's the weather there?
New Jersey is unseasonably warm, but I can tell you it's still fun to be around. It's been a pleasant year thus far. So it's all good.
Fantastic. So let's talk about e-commerce. How exactly do those cool AI-powered chatbots and virtual assistants provided by First Source make personalized recommendations and assist customers?
Yeah, I think let's take a step back, right? Whenever I think of customer experience, right? A lot of us think of the point of interaction with the customer, right? But our belief system and our philosophy is, that's the moment that matters. But a lot of stuff has to be done and can be done in the entire back to front value chain to create that moment that matters, right? And for us, it could be as simple as, if it's an interaction with an agent, is empathy the driving force? Because you can feel it. Customers can feel it, right? If it is with a chatbot, is there enough intelligence and emotional quotient associated with that interaction so that if it's an issue, the issue is resolved? If it's something that can pleasantly surprise the customer, he or she gets that outcome. So for us, we look at it in multiple stages, right? It could be as simple as, specifically for an e-commerce site, it could be as simple as a recommendation engine. The recommendation engines have existed forever. All of us get recommendations. But is it as personalized as it can be? Now, that's where AI can play a big role. We are seeing this significant shift in Gen AI and large language models having the ability to understand images, understand context, understand sentiment. And a lot of this in the form of analytics and recommendations plays into how the chatbot can make the conversation very real instead of by default you knowing that you're interacting with a bot. And there are three places that I would like to call out. Number one is, instead of just looking at what the chatbot does, look at how the coding is done and if the development team actually uses something like a Copilot for generating and validating code. It's become very real today and we've tested it and it works. That makes sure that the backend and the code, the foundation works well for what outcome you want. The second is, in any e-commerce website, there are two parties that are at play. One is the suppliers and then is the consumer. But how consistent is the information from the supplier populated into the database? You know, and it could be as simple as, are all the parameters and descriptions of the product available? And they, are they consistently available? So those things can be automatically extracted, you know, and populated today using AI. And then comes the most important part, right? A, if the AI models today can understand that I typically buy stuff that is pink. So I can show in terms of recommendation, what is pink, right? Instead of a blue sofa in a red room, I can actually show a pink sofa. So our ability to use the technologies bases our understanding of the persona that we are interacting with and the data elements and the data history that exists, and then fine-tuning the interaction so that it is truly personal is something we are seeing e-commerce in customers actually benefit quite a bit. You know, we do work for very large e-commerce clients, and we are seeing this in play today as we speak.
Fantastic. Just to carry this forward, this conversation, an AI could, you know, go through several data points. So how do you teach? I'm talking from a very larger perspective, an eagle's eye view. So how many parameters can an AI go through when we're talking about data?
When we say AI, right? I mean, machine learning as the most foundational implementation of AI has existed for a while, right? And it was always about, can I train the model? The advantage we have today is there are so many pre-trained models that you could take and you could fine-tune them. So for us to create a foundation model, with the amount of data is required is humongous. But there are so many pre-trained models, so it doesn't become a count of I can do, you know, 150 parameters, 300 parameters, 18,000 parameters, right? It becomes more about, can I give contextual data that can be used to tune the model? I'll give you another example. It's not just about what you train the model with in that interaction. It could be an agent talking to a customer, and you could understand the best behavior agent. And we do it today. We take the attributes of the best agent and you replicate that and provide it as prompts to the agent so that he or she knows that, hey, there's a real-time analysis of the sentiment. This is the answer that I should give, right? And we often talk about what extra AI can do, but AI can also help us stop certain things that we are doing. You already sold something, don't oversell it, right? In the cross-sell, upsell. You're able to react to it. So the learning and the data that goes into the model is not just about one dimension. It is also learning up from the best agents, learning about sentiment. So multiple dimensions being fed in so that the best behavior of the agent can be portrayed when the interaction happens with the customer.
Sundar, we all know that web chat has become a popular digital channel for banks to interact with their customers. But how can banks make the most out of this channel? How can they enhance customer service and build brand loyalty using web chat as a tool? And of course, we'd love to know how First Source plays a role in this process.
You know, not many of our viewers might know, right? First Source started as an offshoot of the ICICI Bank, right? Way back in 2001. So for us, you know, as a company, you know, we understand banking in a much more fundamental way because that's our core business. And a majority of our customers are very, very large banks. And if you look at the banking ecosystem, it's actually a fight for, you know, customers. And what drives that is, think about it, the interest rates and the ecosystem is driven by macroeconomic conditions, right? There are other factors that come into play. So the only thing that is in the control of a bank is the experience that you can give your customer. That becomes core to the philosophy of what you can do to retain a customer, to win back a customer, and also build loyalty. So you can do this, you know, multiple ways, but I'll give you specific examples instead of talking generic, right? One is, if it is a chat ecosystem, your ability to do that interaction in such a way that you're able to understand the chat, understand the sentiment from the chat, extract key information from the chat, feed it to possibly an assisted automation that can go and fetch the necessary information to populate the agent in a heartbeat, so that the agent is not doing the chores of the job, but the person that is chatting has all the information, right, in one snapshot. That today is very real. The second is, what kind of recommendations can be given to the agent or even the chatbot on what kind of messaging has to go back? The third is, what kind of analytics can come into play for that particular interaction to become more personalized, right? Hmm. All of this is possible today, and we are seeing banks do this. We've implemented, first thing is, how do we decide the chat is the right channel? I mean, there's considerable amount of analytics that go, because you have omni-channel, right? It could be a visual IVR, you know, that can be much more productive for the consumer based on the past behavior. It could be that there's a certain threshold and you actually switch over from the chat to an actual agent because it might be the value that you want to add. So it's not just about the AI that can summarize, that can contextualize, that can do sentiment analysis and provide a necessary response, but it is also the deep analytics that goes behind it to figure out the right choice of channel. Hmm. Another example, right? Collections is very big, right, in the banking ecosystem. And how do you do collections, keeping empathy in the forefront? For us, we've been using digital collections for a while, right? And the advantage with digital collections, again, is we use, you know, machine models that can actually suggest the strategy that has to be adopted for the outreach. What time should the email go out? What should be the subject of the email, right? And if the email fails, what is the next? Is it an SMS? Is it a different email? What are the payment options that should be provided to the consumer so that his financial burden is lessened rather than having him to choose something? So all of this, there's phenomenal amount of technology today that we use in the form of machine learning, in the form of GenAI, in the form of even as simple as RPA that is integrated to provide that delight at the point of interaction. And this is very real for, you know, in today's banking world for the customers that we service.
Really amazing answer. Sundara, I had a follow-up question to this. How far is a chatbot from an actual assistant, like a full-fledged human assistant? And how much time is it going to take for a chatbot to reach to that level of understanding where we'd not need a human intervention?
You know, this is you know, we call it general artificial intelligence, right? And I'm not sure the chatbot behaving like a human is still GAI, right? I mean, GAI is even a little bit more advanced. Hmm. But for us, I think it is not, philosophically, it is not about saying that a chatbot can replace a human, right? I think it is for us to understand what is the right mode of interaction so that there is a human in the loop and the chatbot does what it is good at and the human takes over at the point in time where it is appropriate. My personal view, it's probably less than 5-6 years away when you start seeing chatbots become more and more and more human. There are many examples today, but the reality is this, right? What is available in the public domain and the art of possible to become very real within an enterprise, the gap is typically about 36 to 48 months. Because when you take the capability that is available in a public domain and make it real within an enterprise, you start dealing with the limitations of an enterprise with the availability of data, the availability of security, the guardrails that have to go around it. So it's a very controlled ecosystem within which you want to exploit the capability to its fullest, right? Mm. So for a chatbot to become real, the capability might exist, but for it to become real within an enterprise for a B2C conversation, it's going to take a little bit, but not too much.
Fantastic. So when businesses are, you know, they want to bring AI to their customer service game, what factors should they consider and how can they ensure a smooth customer experience with first source support?
Today, you know, one of the biggest advantages, you know, our philosophy is what we call digital first, digital now, right? And there's a reason why, you know, we coined this. The whole world knows, you know, there's a machine first mindset you need to take to providing customer service. But the key is now, right? Because the time is now. Our belief system is that every opportunity that an enterprise misses to adopt a new technology leaves them at least 24 months behind a competitor that has started working on it, right? So I think the 24-month gap becomes wider and wider, the rate at which technology is evolving. So if I was an enterprise, if I was a bank, if I was a healthcare company, and I know the art of possible, there are three things that I would suggest and what we see our customers adopting. Number one, are you actually creating an ecosystem within your enterprise that gives you the ability to play around with these technologies so that you know what is the limit? The second is, are you creating a broad-based democratization in the form of understanding not just the capabilities, but the sensitivities associated with some of these technologies, right? It could be in the form of a COE with multiple dimensions, or it could be democratization in the form of training. For example, everybody talks about GAI, but the costs of the lack of a good prompt engineering could skyrocket the benefits that you get, right? So the need to understand what engineering needs to go behind it so that you can actually keep the costs in control with the security and the privacy. The third is, we've seen our customers, most successful customers, not have a hammer and start looking for nails, right? You got to look at our framework is about looking at multiple technologies from the point of view of what is relevant for a business process, right? It's not just, implementing a chatbot. It possibly is implementing a chatbot. We've rolled out for a telecom giant 25,000 agents that use, an assisted automation, because they work on, actually multiple systems while there is a query from the customer for changing the order. And we've automated that process. So the agent now has that chore taken away. So when you start looking at implementation of these technologies, it's not the most complex. It is an understanding of right-sizing the capability for what works to make that business process efficient while delivering customer experience that is world-class. So domain knowledge is extraordinarily important if you want to really find solutions, with an understanding of technology.
Fantastic. You did touch upon healthcare. Healthcare is always full of challenges. Tell us about the hurdles that the system faced when it came to patient financial clearance. How did it affect revenue and patient engagement?
If you look at healthcare, and there are two pieces to the puzzle, right? One is the payer ecosystem, it's getting stronger and stronger, at least in the US. And then we support about 900 hospitals in the US on the provider side, right? And we a considerable amount of work we do is on two pieces of the puzzle. One is, a lot of patients that walk in without insurance, and they are at the point of service and they're struggling because they get the service, but they don't know whether they're eligible for Medicaid. They don't know whether they're eligible for other kinds of financial assistance, right? So our platforms, again, this is a combination of it's cloud native, it's rolled out in a heartbeat to our hospital providers. But our platforms use a combination of technologies, including automation, including machine models, for us to be able to do near real-time analysis to say, you are eligible for XYZ. You are eligible for financial assistance or other services that you can avail at this point in time. One of the key points associated with patient financial experiences, there's a lot of focus on patient experience as always been, because that's the core for this the hospital providing the service. But often ignored is the financial burden that goes with it, that the patient has to endure, which might last way beyond the point of service as well, right? So our ability to use technology to lessen that burden, we've seen significant uptake on two fronts. One, first, the patient experience is better. The second, this is revenue for the hospital that they will struggle with, right? And it's a big deal because, at that point in time, the service is mandatory. They have to provide the service. That's the nature of the hospital. But their financial burden, we've seen an uptick of 40 to 50% in collecting this money at the point of service or identifying avenues for the hospital. This is one part of the puzzle. The second is at the end of the cycle, when the hospital or the provider has to collect from the patient, our collections ecosystem, whether it is the recommendation engine, whether it is the propensity to pay models that help you go and collect, or it is as simple as the right reach out using the right digital channel. We've seen well over 70% increase in collection rates using our digital channels for hospital as opposed to the traditional call and collect.
Wow.
Again, keeping in mind, these are real, you know, real life scenarios where we've seen the uptick on how digital collections can be, play a big role in the revenue cycle.
Really fantastic. And I'm now more curious about how technology in healthcare made things like scheduling, prior authorization and payment collection easier for patients. How did it boost efficiency and make the whole patient experience better?
Yeah, I mean, about 2 years back, you know, or 3 years back, a lot of it was about, you know, the pre-registration, you know, the scheduling. We introduced a lot of things related to COVID, right? Hmm. A set of mandatory questions, making sure that, you know, there is a set of guidance given. And that's where the entire interaction model with the patient started becoming more and more digital. Hmm. Today, there are, again, multiple things we do. We use technology to make this as seamless as possible, to the extent that if the patient is coming in for an MRI, we're able to give the patient a view of, you know, what is the estimate out of pocket that he or she has to be ready with. Hmm. More often than not, right, it's like a black box. I don't know how much I'm going to be accountable for. Hmm. But today, with today's technology, with the insurance information, with other information, and the direct feed integrations that we've done with the hospital's EMR systems, we're able to actually say, this is what you need to be ready for. And if you're not able to pay this, there are these avenues that we can help you with. So scheduling, registration, patient estimate, and making all this seamless in such a way that there could be a hospital ecosystem, but the patient goes to MRI to one center, he or she goes for a blood test to another center, and then he goes for the actual service to a hospital. Giving all of this in one view makes it really easy for the patient to understand everything on one page.
Mm.
Okay? So again, you know, whether it is AI in the form of recommendation engines for what the patient has done, or it is machine models for that are as simple as, you know, for a hospital, when they raise a claim, to figure out whether this claim has a pre-authorization, needs a pre-authorization, is it going to get denied? So denial prediction models and ability to avoid that. So it helps both on the front end for the patient and for the claims processing side for the hospital as well. That's where we see a phenomenal amount of benefit with our platforms, our technology that we implement today for our customers.
I'm again curious to ask this question to you. Is this also happening in, you know, developing countries? Are they also adapting AI at the speed which a developed country is?
I think I see two things, right? Number one, developing countries, the regulations around the use of technology are not that stringent compared to the developed countries, right? And so I see a lot more activity in exploring AI, you know, in the startup ecosystem, within healthcare, within developing countries, right? Now, this brings in two problems. Number one, the lack of a clear control and governance mechanism associated with data privacy, associated with patient confidentiality, are not problems we are worried about today, but they will become problems as this matures. But we see a lot more adoption and tryout and experimentation on that front. Whereas with developed countries, I'm seeing this, you know, we run into this problem of, if you take a healthcare payer, I can actually use GenAI to solve a lot of questions that come up. Because a lot of questions, about 40% of the questions that come up to a, you know, health insurer's call center is a question about my benefit plan, right? I'm going to go for an X-ray, right? How much is covered? How much of it is not covered? What will be my out-of-pocket? What will be my copay, right? Now, these are questions that, you know, we've done considerable amount of experimentation. We can actually solve with GenAI. We can solve with large language models that can understand these payment grids, which are standard and public domain available information. But for you to now implement that within an enterprise for healthcare, there's a lot of data privacy, data challenges, and the guardrails, because, you know, you can't have the engine make a recommendation with a bias. Right? So how do you avoid ethical bias, especially in patient confidentiality and patient recommendation? So I think it's a balance, right? On one side, I see developing countries with the lack of these regulations have the ability to try out more, And on the other side, developed countries with these regulations, when we implement something and it's already happening, it becomes very real, right? And you are now protecting yourself from what could be potential pitfalls that you might face in the future.
Hmm. You did talk about service centers. Let's go to the telecom contact centers. You know, they have a potential to create delightful experiences for customers, going beyond traditional customer service. How can they achieve this? And what are some strategies that they can employ to contribute to revenue generation?
Yeah, I mean, there are multiple things that we do today with our telecom customers, right? Hmm. One is on the service side. Let me talk about that, right? Everybody is now gone away from the craze of the metaverse about 2 years back, right? Hmm. Nobody talks about the metaverse anymore. But we've actually implemented similar to metaverse ecosystem for training agents that are sitting in India and doing servicing for our broadband router issues, right? Because our agents and a lot of our agents who sit in India and are taking service calls, they don't really understand how the home looks in the US, right? How the actual router looks, whether it's the blue wire, the red wire, what is the standard configuration? You could do all this, you know, in the form of videos, but when you actually, you know, have the agent trained using this in the metaverse, it becomes real. And when it becomes real, the ability for the agent to empathize with the customer and provide the service, the ability goes up multiple notches, right? And I think that is an area where we're seeing significant shift. The second is, you know, the recommendation engine's becoming smarter, right? The agent, the customer is calling because, you know, his or her bill has gone up, right? So we are using digital adoption proactively to say, hey, your bill is so and so, click on this. You can click on it and it gives a video of what was the bill last time, what is the bill this time, what services were more consumed more. So explanation of the bill is actually a pretty big deal for telecom companies.
Hmm.
Right? So can you make that easier? When a customer calls in, can we use tools like visual IVR, where the consumer or the customer can go give the data, instead of calling, convert it to a visual IVR, goes through the details, clicking on it, goes to the specific account without having to call up somebody to get an answer. Right? Mm. So the servicing side of it, phenomenal amount of technology usage. And on the customer, win back and sales side of it, your ability to first win back a customer, retain a customer, and then upsell and cross-sell using agent assist, using conversational AI technologies, understanding sentiment. These are things that we've implemented where, you know, they buy XYZ, but based on the patterns, they will actually save a little bit more if they sign on to this other service or switch over from plan A to plan B. That recommendation is now very real instead of just hypothetical. And giving the agent the cue as the agent is having the interaction with prompts to say, this is what you should say now. And then after all of this, think of compliance, right? Mm. There are certain things the agent has to say. There's certain things the agent shouldn't say, right? All of this becomes prompts so that the agent's behavior becomes better. And you're not just solving for the problem, but you're also upselling and cross-selling, right? Mm. All of this is in play today for a telecom company.
So, sounds so fantastic. I mean, I had this question since eternity that, like, telecom agents, they have a certain empathy towards the customer. But usually it's the customer who does not empathize with the agent. But with the AI teaching how to empathize with the customer and how to give the right prompts, I think this would definitely contribute to revenue generation.
Yeah, and you actually bring up a very good point. You should see, why is the customer frustrated, right? Because, and so you can't, that this goes back to our philosophy of, you know, our fabric, which looks at, it's not just the point of service. What happens before that, right? If it's a billing problem, I paid about $150 and today you give me a bill for $230. Obviously, my starting point is frustration.
Hmm.
But if there's an explanation for that, there's a reasoning for that, and also a solution to how you can reduce that bill the next month, then the first thing is you probably avoid the call. And when you do call, there is context on both sides so that the conversation is about a solution and explanation rather than frustration that could easily skyrocket, you know, if not handled properly.
Also, it saves up time of these agents to reach out to their superiors and get the right answer from them. Is it also a great point with GenAI?
It is. I mean, first thing is your ability to do near real-time sentiment analysis and provide prompts. The second is your ability to, after-call work summarization, right? If there is an eight-minute AHT call, about 5 minutes of that possibly goes in, this is what happened in the call, I need to summarize it. And that increases the frustration for the agent, right? But with GenAI, after-call work summarization is actually very, very real. It's a simple use case. It's implemented. It works. And you're able to then take a step back. And at the end of the day, when the supervisor is looking at agent behavior and looking for specific guidance to be provided, he or she now has the intelligence from this summaries for him to provide the right guidance to the agent to make sure they become better every day. Right? So all of this is possible because it's become simple than it was before.
Moving on to the next question. How does PerSource help customers identify candidate process for AI deployments?
Yeah, this is, I think our philosophy is a little different, right? It's not about identifying candidates for AI deployments. For us, it's about identifying business value that needs to be delivered, business outcome that needs to be delivered, and what technologies can we use to deliver that outcome, right? More often than not, it is, it is AI, it is RPA, it is process excellence, it is process elimination. So our fabric and framework is about looking at the business process end to end and then figuring out what are the levers that are in play, right? Is it as simple as making the agent productivity higher and customer experience higher using automation and analytics? And if you're going to use these technologies, you look at the entire value chain. And we look at it at four levels, right? Everybody looks at user interaction. There is an application layer, there is a data layer, and then there is an infra layer. When we go and suggest customers, we look at not just the top layer, but hey, what are the changes that can be done at a process level, but also these multiple levels so that the right technology is used. And it might sound a little weird, right? Everybody wants to talk about the best technology, the latest technology, but more often than not, it could be a simplistic technology that bases analytics that you can deploy that can move the needle considerably further, right? In the case of mortgage ecosystem, right, it could be if we take the origination value chain, right, and you break it down to sub-processes, you break it down to tasks, and you look at a process level and you look at a task level, then you start suggesting these are the technologies that can be deployed. For us, when we suggest to customers how to look for opportunities, we ask them to look for opportunities basis outcome. Do you want to drive greater customer experience in this process? Do you want to drive greater efficiency? And if so, is there similarity in the way you approach this, both in terms of horizontal and vertical? Identify the cohorts and use the right technology. It's a well-established methodology that we use in our fabric that helps us drive the right outcomes with the focus on, what can be done to optimize, streamline, improve the process rather than this is the technology, let us go and deploy it, right? If that helps. Long-winded answer, but that's the way it goes.
It is a perfect answer. And this brings me to my next question. Deploying AI systems to make customer happy is cool, but what about the ethical side? What should businesses keep in mind to make sure that they're doing the right and not causing any trouble?
Yeah, I think this is a often ignored, right? We talk about it, but I'm not too thrilled that this is an area that's not getting enough focus as much as it should have. It should. Because today everybody's talking about the art of possible. And every company out there says, I have a solution, I have a framework. There are three pieces to this puzzle. One is data privacy, right? And how do you make sure that the model that you're using actually doesn't take PHI and PIA information and throw it to the cloud, right? What kind of governance do you need to set up so that the, you know, the learning is based on what is available in the globe, but the actual implementation is basis your corpus. That's the first, data privacy and security. The second is, how do I know that, you know, the answer is not biased? There is going to be bias, right? Because, you know, you can, the response and the result is only as good as the training data that you provide the model with.
True.
Right? So our approach is two ways. Number one, a lot of platforms that we use suggest that we use two different models, another model to validate the output of the first one so that you can eliminate bias. The second is, we always look at the initial stages of implementation with a human in the loop. Right? Now, that it seems like an overkill, but you probably need to do that so that you understand where to draw the line between what is actually the right recommendation and where it crosses the line to bias. Right? And this is more so in the case of what benefit information you're giving. What are you upselling, cross-selling? Right? How are you solving a specific query that a customer asks? Based on history, there could be a pattern. Right? So you know, somebody calls an e-commerce website and keeps canceling orders. Right? Does the model learn from that and say that the next time this guy calls, okay, I'm not going to do it? Or does the model say that, hey, you've been doing this, so I'll give you the cancellation free? Right? So how do you draw the line between a recommendation and bias? So that's the second thing, right? Can another model validate it? But the human in the loop is extremely important. But my personal view is, I don't think we have an answer to this today yet, right? Because we've not yet seen the impact of, you know, bias actually play out in real life as much as it probably can. And I think this will evolve over the next, you know, in my opinion, a couple of quarters.
This seems like just out of a science fiction movie that, you know, AI is going to be so self-reliant one day that, you know, we would not need human intervention. And this is what people have been talking about. It's, I think it's the romanticism with AI that gets us over here. But when we look at the practical side of it, the usability of Gen AI, then we see that not only do we save time, but we also get the best outcomes. What do you think is the future for Gen AI in like coming 5 years?
Okay, you know, you can choose to, you know, ignore this, but a friend of mine a few years back said, I don't know if I trust artificial intelligence, but I do trust natural stupidity. Right? and you know, there's a certain predictability associated with that. But leaving the fun aside, right? I think this is real. This is very, very real. This is as real as it can get. You know, we're using GitHub Copilot, and it's adding phenomenal value, right? But you also have to be careful about plagiarism. You have to be careful about, you know, what is generated as code and how you validate it. We use technologies that can do automated test scripts, right? You write the test in English, and it creates the test script automatically, Gen AI, right? We use call summarization. We use it for, you know, sentiment analysis, right? So a lot of this, if you go back to Laws of Subtraction, the book by May, Google, right, introduced transformers a while back, but it never took off. But why did Gen AI and ChatGPT, what did it do? It made it easy for the interaction. So the key to success, just as when Google was launched in the early 99 and 2000, the simplistic form of nothing else on the page but one box where I could enter a search, right? It remove all the complexity and make the interaction simple. What has become real today with ChatGPT and the likes is the interaction model has become very simple, right? And that is why you see the skyrocketing of adoption, or at least experimentation. So my view is, whether it is the development IT technology side, it's become real. Whether it is the contact center, you know, interaction with the customer, it's become real. Whether it is deep analytics and image analysis and recommendations and extraction, it's become real. So my belief is over the next 5 years, just as we said that, you know, it's not going to take away jobs, but it's going to have people do other jobs.
Mm.
That's become real.
Right? This was so, in one of my podcast episodes that I spoke about it. I said that in, you know, late 1960s, there were people who were getting hired for being a typist. You don't find a typist skill requirement in people anymore. Then came computers, people who could access floppy drives and save data of 1.44 MB onto that floppy drive. It's non-existent. And with times moving ahead, technologies change. And this is just one more thing that we need to adopt in our day-to-day life.
Yeah, I agree. Only difference with this shift is the disruption that this is going to cause and the challenge it's throwing for people that were experts in their area is very different than we've faced all along. And that's going to force us to learn more, adapt more, and whether we like it or not, this is the future that we have to live with.
Right. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Sundara, for sharing your time. I'd let all my listeners know that Sundara is an avid golfer. He loves to play golf. Is your weekend plan set? Are you going to enjoy a session of golf or two?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I work 5 days a week so that I can golf 2 days a week. That's the philosophy. So,
fantastic. Thank you once again to share your time with us, Sundara, and give us so much insight about Gen AI, and wish you all the best at golf.
Thank you, Ayush. Thanks a lot for this opportunity.
Guys, I hope that you enjoyed today's conversation on Mint Tech Sectra brought to you by NASSCOM. If you have enjoyed this podcast, then don't forget to follow us on our socials, that is @HTSmartcast on Instagram and Twitter. You can search for us on Facebook as HT Smartcast. If you have any feedback to give, you can give that feedback on our mail ID, that is podcast@HindustanTimes.com. That is podcast@HindustanTimes.com. I'm Ayush, and I'll see you around in a fresh new episode of Mint Tech Sector. And for more podcasts like this, you can log on to www.htsmartcast.com.
So that's that for this episode. We really hope that you enjoyed what we discussed. And if you have suggestions in terms of what more we can cover as part of our podcast, do let us know. You can catch me at Distant Vicinity on Twitter and at Shovik Das on Instagram. Thank you so much. See you next time.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HT Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.htsmartcast.com.